Welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 287. Today we'll be discussing Sense8's season 2, episode 5, Fear Never Fixed Anything. I'm Danielle, and I'm going to be your host for today. And I am joined by three hosts that I know you love because I love them too. We have superfan Mai and newbies Brittany and Caitlin. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
If you would like to get in contact with any of us at any point, please, please, please reach out to us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable, or you can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you're anything like me and you listen to podcast episodes and really wish that you could just talk back to the hosts or correct them, I guess, as they're going along, we want to hear what you have to say. Even though it might not show up while we're recording, we want to hear it. So please come reach out to us. And to get everyone used to the sounds of our voices, because you probably haven't heard us in at least a week or two, we are going to do our fun facts. So Brittany, would you like to kick us off?
Oh, sure. So I'm Brittany, and I just got back from 11 days abroad 4.5 hours ago. And I'm very sleepy because I'm still on four different time zones, I feel like. But I went to Paris for the first time ever, and this is for a lot rewatchable related, and I saw a woman standing in outside of the Notre Dame Cathedral wearing an Avatar t-shirt, and that was pretty cool. But it was kind of cold, so I hope she had a jacket somewhere and was just posing with the t-shirt for some reason outside of Notre Dame. I don't know what Avatar has to do with that, but I'm sure. Yeah. I did not want to talk to her or engage, but that's okay. She was having a great time getting her photo taken. But yeah, I am just super tired. So if you don't hear from me halfway through the episode, it's because I fell asleep. But I'm going to try to stay with you.
Passed out. Well, we're hoping that doesn't happen, but thank you for the warning. Let's see, Caitlin, would you like to give us your fun fact for the week?
So we are a few days out from Halloween, and I don't really celebrate Halloween other than my tradition is always to get a pizza and watch The Nightmare Before Christmas and have a sing-along in my apartment. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing on Wednesday.
I love that tradition. That's so cute. I didn't know that.
It just sort of happened, and it's now I watch The Nightmare Before Christmas every Halloween, and it's that movie has held up. It's really amazing.
It is amazing. It's a good one. And Mai, your fun fact for the week.
My fun fact is that we turned the clocks back, and I was almost really, really late to this podcast.
But you weren't.
No, I wasn't. So
you got it. So we're glad that you could join us.
Just really late, not really, really late.
Yeah, there's a difference. It happens to everyone being late or a no-show, so it's okay.
Not judging. I've been there.
Not judging. All right. And so my fun fact for the week is I participated in my very first 5K yesterday. I say participated because I didn't run, but I walked it. It was for my friend has sarcoma, which is a really rare form of cancer. And so we were doing, it was like called the race for sarcoma. It was a 5K. So we all did it as a team, and like we walked with them, and it was really great. And I've never done a 5K before because I have a really bad back and it sucks. And I was told I was never going to be able to run outside, but that's kind of not really the case anymore. So this will be the first of hopefully quite a few 5Ks in the future. So it was exciting for me. Yeah. So I want to get into this episode because, as usual with Sense8, a lot of things that I don't remember happen in these episodes. And I'm just kind of like, oh, there's so much here. And this episode definitely had a lot in it that I want to get into. But before we do, here is the show synopsis that actually I wrote this week. So speaking of another first, I wrote our show synopsis this week. And it reads, while Cepheus and Kala are dealing with political issues, Leto and Nomi are contemplating their own potential metaphorical deaths. Meanwhile, Wolfgang still believes himself to be a lone wolf and actually turns down sex. Sun reunites with her adorable dog and sort of reunites with the almost equally adorable Detective Moon. And Riley decides that the answer to the cluster's issues is a rave where the doctor's in attendance. So that's basically what happened in this episode. But to kick everything off, I want to talk about that first scene with everybody and kind of get reactions to Jonas and what happened to Jonas. At the end of the last episode, we saw that the doctors were basically going to cut open his brain, and our cluster saw his death. And I feel like opening on the image of Nomi in this episode, kind of like in the moments right after, was a really strong image. How did you guys react to the fact that Jonas was in this position and like the cluster had to watch him die?
Did the whole cluster watch him die, or was it just Nomi and Will?
Fair question. I guess it would be just Nomi and Will.
Because I was a little confused, like, as to why. Like, I guess because they all feel each other's pain and sadness. But it was just weird to see the rest of the cluster so upset. But I answered my own question by reminding myself that they feel what everyone is feeling. But yeah, I thought it was just the two of them that watched it, from what I remember.
Yes, I think you're correct. So thank you for that correction. I was just kind of thinking of it in terms of like, yeah, the other members of the cluster would feel that sort of like shock and disgust, I would think.
Yeah, there were quite a few scenes in this episode where the cluster was together, but I felt like they really weren't. And I don't know if that's just because of the, I think that the more powerful scenes of the cluster being together have already happened. And now, I don't know. I'm not sure if I like scenes with all of them together processing things. I like that they're a team, but I also have stronger feelings of them being connected when they're separated, if that makes sense. Like when you see like just Caffeus popping into a scene and, or, you know, three of them at once, and the group scenes in this episode, and it's something I noted throughout the whole thing, like just felt very not connected. And this was one of them. And the other one was...
Shot?
No, not the shot. The dance, like when they're all getting like kind of ready in like the same bathroom, and then they're dancing at Riley's event, which I know they're supposed to be like the bigger scenes where like you're in it and you feel it, but it was nothing like the birthday celebration or when they're sitting on the boat. But I don't know if that's just like watching too much Sense8. Or if it's, I don't know, maybe it's just like a point in the series.
No, I get what you're saying. I wonder if it, because it's becoming more commonplace, it feels less special in that way.
Yeah, maybe.
Because we are seeing more of it, it feels...
Yeah, in this episode alone, like we just had to run through a few of the scenes to get to the one that I was talking about. And like that just goes to show exactly what you were saying. Like it's not as special anymore.
Are you feeling that as well, Caitlin? Are you still seeing these scenes as like really as how you were before?
I didn't notice any difference personally. But I did find, I think I'm always going to be confused about Jonas on this show because I've been going on like, why does anybody trust him? And I don't trust him now that he's apparently dead. Like, and I don't feel like he ever gave any of them a reason to trust a damn word out of his mouth. So they're all like, oh, so sad and tearful. And I'm just like, why? I mean, I guess it's kind of awful. I wasn't clear on if they murdered him or just lobotomized him, but like, yeah, that's awful. But dude kind of brought it on himself, because if he just told Will the truth the first time they met, he never would have gotten himself caught. I don't know. I've never understood the connection to this character.
That was definitely part of, I think, what kicked off my little side tangent. So it is all connected in a way, but Caitlin's just better at putting words into the form that I'm thinking them.
She really is. No, I get that. Yeah, I think, and I know the gang last week were having discussions about Angelica as well. And I think that while this show does a great job in getting us to understand and appreciate, obviously, the main characters, their sidekicks, if you want to call them that. And even some of the new sensates that we see popping in every once in a while, they don't do a great job with both Angelica and Jonas. It's very much Jonas withheld information and never, like you said, never gave us a reason to trust him or really even care about him. I think the most that I care about him up to this point was when he was talking about like seeing his sensate father in the middle of the train station. Like that was the most humanizing part, because otherwise Jonas hasn't given up anything else.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that could have been a much more interesting character. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there was, well, we talked earlier about how like him withholding information at the start was more like a plot device than anything. And that really just sort of shaped his character arc from the beginning and just sort of determined where he ended up. And that's kind of frustrating because I can see the potential in that character, but I don't feel like it was fully realized.
Definitely. Mai, do you see Jonas in this way as well, especially on rewatch?
Yeah, they definitely didn't use him as much as I think I imagined that they did.
Mm-hmm. Or perhaps they like used him rather than incorporated him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, nevertheless, his fate kicked off this episode on a real downer, which I had completely forgotten, actually, that he was in trouble at the end of the last episode. So when it opened on Nomi crying this time, I was confused at first because I didn't remember why she was crying, which I guess says a lot about Jonas's role on the show. But moving on from Jonas, I want to quickly talk about Wolfgang. We get pretty much one full scene with him, and we see him going to, I think what he assumes is a meeting that ends up being something that Lila called him there for. She attempts to seduce him, doesn't work, and she just seems to like throw herself at him, but in a way where you can tell that there are ulterior motives. And I also, before we quickly talk about this, I also want to mention that she talks about how the nightclub owner Sebastian was going to go after one of the main gangs. And something that she said there really sticks out, and it's that she's going to make sure basically that she benefits no matter what. How does this inform the way that we see Lila, or actually I think it's Lila? This scene just didn't sit well with me, and I was wondering what your guys' reaction to it was, especially that one line that she had.
She's just the worst. Like, talking about, like, underdeveloped, underused characters, like, there's so much going on right now in the series, and so much with, like, BPO and, you know, just everything coming to a head, that this character just feels like the stupidest distraction. Like, I just want an answer from her. Like, I was getting okay with the slow unraveling of everything else, but this character is just like a thorn in my side. And of course she's with Wolfgang because it's the only character that really makes sense for her to be connected with and going after. But yeah, I can't really figure her out. And I also kind of don't care about her. Like, every time she shows up, I'm like, all right, you're still around and you're a thing we have to deal with. But she is kind of serving as a little bit of like a key to like another cluster, but also at the same time to Wolfgang's real life story. And then she's a mess, man.
Yeah. And even if she is like a key to his real life story, to me, it seems like that whole thing just takes a backseat to whatever she has going on.
Exactly.
It doesn't even feel like Wolfgang's story to me at this point.
Yeah, and like Wolfgang, I felt like he had the most agency in this episode, and literally all he did was walk into a room and say people's names. But for some reason, I was like, oh my God, like you're doing something? Like, it was so alarming to me that like things weren't being like said to him and he wasn't just standing there with like a sad look on his face. Like, because I feel like that's been most of his scenes for like this whole entire series. Mm-hmm. And I really like him. And when he walked into the room, mm-hmm. and he's like yelling people's names, I was like, look at you. And that's literally all he did. And I felt like, so proud that he was able to do that. And then, like, when they're at the bar scene and Leto's like, Wolfgang? And I was like, what? You're going to ask him? All right. Part of the gang.
And he's going to give advice? What?
I was like, I don't know why. I had this, like, overwhelming sense of, like, oh, all right.
Look at you go.
Look at you go. You said some names. You gave some advice. We don't need to hear from you for, like, 4 or 5 episodes. And I just felt so bad, but I really like him, so I was like also like super pumped. I know it's so minor, but I felt it really deep down.
No, it's because he's actually being a character in his own story. So I totally
get it. He was alone in a room speaking. It was amazing.
And he turned down sex.
Yeah, look at him go. So interesting.
I very pointedly noticed the way his eyes stayed up on her face the whole time.
Yes.
Great point. I forgot about that. He just was not showing any interest. Which before now, it kind of felt like he would get with pretty much anyone who tried. Or maybe who didn't even try and just like looked at him.
Yeah, because it was so disappointing like the first few times where he just like let it happen and I'm like, what are you doing? Stop it.
But yeah, Lila's 10 times more creepy than those women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like her.
And I just kept thinking, why are all the femme fatales named Lila? Like Lila and Angel, Lila on the show. And I'm like, you would not play golf on your computer. You are not cool.
She is not on that level. Yeah, and I don't mind. I mean, she was taking a bath. Makes total sense. But I was bothered by the fact that, like, she puts on a robe,
but doesn't
close it. Like, if you're going to put on a robe, it's because you're kind of cold. So putting it on your back and your arms isn't going to help you much.
Nah, it's because it looks good.
I know. Mm.
There's one thing about this scene that I actually kind of like, or about Lila in general, and that's how she's managing to fool Wolfgang. She's kind of lying to him. And in previous episodes, we've been talking about how that's something that Homo sapiens appreciated being able to do, lie to each other.
Right, because Homo sensorium's like, you can't lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point. She's definitely one to keep an eye on. And I mean, if this episode is any indication, Wolfgang's story is going to pretty much revolve around her or kind of involve her pretty heavily. But someone who wasn't involved in Wolfgang's story this week was Kala, which is sort of sad. But she's preoccupied, once again, as Caitlin has pointed out previously, in creating her own problems. We kind of get her sitting with her dad, and her dad is very much the one to draw things out of Kala pretty much all the time. And she's talking about not appreciating her good fortune, which makes sense after she was involved in that sort of protest kind of riot last week and have seen things from people in her cluster, seen things happening around the world. And she's moping again. And ever since Caitlin pointed it out, especially during the first season, I haven't been able to stop being frustrated with Kala in this way. Like, I understand that she's unhappy, but up until actually this point, it seems like Rajan has been open to discussing these sorts of things with her. And I wish they would get off of this, I don't know, created drama with Kala. Does anyone feel like this is maybe different? Like her creating her own problems is different from before?
I think I'd like it more if I thought they were doing it on purpose. Mm-hmm. Like her being a person who knew that she has all of these things and is wondering, why am I not happy? Instead of seeming like she's complaining, if that makes sense.
like if she was trying to find the fix to like, why is she unhappy rather than just wallowing in being unhappy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem like the show is like doing this on purpose. It's just a thing that is.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Ugh, I think I tweeted while I was watching it. I was like, I kind of hate her at this point. Like, I want to like her so much. But I'm like, she literally said, my life is so perfect. Like,
yeah.
And I don't like that. Like, do you listen to yourself? I just, I'm kind of done with her. Like, she causes all of her own problems. And then her life gets better. And then she makes more problems for herself. And I just, I'm so over her. Which makes me sad because I really want to like her.
Mm-hmm.
But she has done nothing likable, really.
I like seeing her when she has agency in talking about, like, drugs and medicine. Like, when we saw her talking to Vincent and Puck in Riley's shoes, or
making the bomb.
Or in this episode, there's that one scene where she goes to talk to Rajan, and she mentions how there are issues with discrepancies between their drug shipments and quality assessments. And I like that, Kala. I didn't like that Rajan brushed her off. Did not feel great. And the guy that his friend, whose name I'm sorry I can't remember, I don't like him either. But I like that Kala, and I wish we would see more of that, because I feel like that's who I remember her being as a character when I think about Sense8. And I forget that we have to wade through all of this indecision and creation of her own issues. But did that scene with Kala and Rajan, did that strike anyone else as odd, especially when it comes to Rajan? Did that seem out of character for him, or just something that was just like an oversight that should be okay?
It struck me as something for us to keep in mind is happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, because that is not the person he has been up right until this point. But I'm seeing it less as out of character and more a negative evolution of his character. He gets more responsibility at his company and starts probably getting more corrupted, which I'm afraid they're going to use as an excuse for Kala to leave him without any guilt, which would just be even more frustrating. But I'm anticipating this being like an ongoing thing where he gets a little more and a little more frustrating and not great as he has been.
Giving Kala another sort of easy out, because it like justifies, like you were saying, it justifies anything that she would do in the wake of this.
Mm-hmm. Because if he is like, I don't know, like diluting drugs or something, like she has every reason, and then lying about it, like of course she is gonna have a good reason to leave him, and then she can feel guilt-free as opposed to, I just don't love you, so I'm leaving you.
Yeah. And if we think about it in terms of the whole cluster, we've kind of seen the effects of what these discrepancies can have, because we see it a little bit in Caffeus's story.
I've been expecting the Caffeus and Kala story to intersect, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if we're going to start to move that way at this point, because I would like to see that. Like, it's very easily set up that those two stories should be interacting in some way.
Right, because they're both very explicitly dealing with medications and drugs. Brittany, did you have any thoughts about how Kala is acting, or about how Rajan reacted to her bringing up these issues?
Well, Rajan went from being one of my favorite people to my least favorite person.
Interesting. Okay.
Because he's just, I think it has to do with Kala. Like, there's just no agency in either of them. Like, he's doing his business the way he thinks it should be done, just like his father, and she's sort of like, oh, I don't know what I want to do with my life, and I don't know if I'm happy. And her work, from what I can tell, makes her happy, but even that's getting the kibosh now because Rajan's steering her in an uncertain direction of that's going to put her almost against her better judgment of what she should be doing to stop what he's doing. And so there's just like, they're just roadblocks against roadblocks, which doesn't make for any detours of good storytelling in their case. So I'm not sure how we're going to get out of it at this point. So they're just frustrating to watch. And that dinner scene was like so intense.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Stop.
Because you're what you just said just now kind of made me think that they're kind of wallowing, or not comfortable, but like in their own complacency to the point where like they didn't do anything to stop the conversation during the dinner. Like they tried to maybe change the subject, but then they just ended up leaving. And like they left her dad high and dry. Because that was a pretty heated argument at that table.
Yeah.
I was so into her dad, though.
Oh my God, he's the best.
I love
him. Absolute best. But his jabs towards Rajan's dad, especially about how like Rajan's dad's destiny was to inherit his father's fortune.
So good.
So interesting. I mean, you don't have to get along if you're in-laws, but it's amazing how much Rajan's father like wanted to start that fight and just kept picking at it.
Yeah, and I like that Kala's dad just went punch for punch, though, like unfazed. Mm-hmm. Just, yes, whatever you say, but also you suck. And that's a many words.
Yeah, it was really heated, but it was really interesting to watch and kind of listen to their discussions about religion and about like Rajan's dad was trying to generalize that everyone with this religion, like they believe in violence, and Kala's dad just like kept shutting him down and saying that like he believes in if you do something wrong you'll get prosecuted for it and it's not like everyone's fault. And I thought it was interestingly placed in here, especially because we'll get to him in a second, but especially since we have that plot line with Cappius and politics. While his doesn't necessarily deal with religion, it's kind of just like another look at how politics can become sort of corrupted, but in a different, obviously in a different place and in a different way. But I think that's really all I have to say about Kala. That was probably more than actually needed to be said about her in this episode. So actually, yes, let's talk about Cappius. He does not have a lot going on in this episode, but one of the major things that happens with him is he's approached by members of the Kenyan Democratic Reform Party, and he is asked in this, they don't live in his community, and yet they want him to run for office. It feels weird to me. Like as we get older, we kind of figure out how politics work, but I thought that was a great question of him to ask, like, are you actually from here? But I want to check in with you, Caitlin, because I know Cappius is your favorite character. And I like checking in with you about this political plot line. How are you feeling about him being approached for this? Is this something that you could see him handling, or it feels shoehorned in?
Well, for me, it doesn't feel like something we would have seen with the first Cappius, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it just makes the new version of him even more obvious, which, again, I still miss my Cappius.
I know, your cinnamon roll. Because someone tweeted at us where the old Cappius was a sweet cinnamon roll, and this one was
Golden Retriever.
Golden Retriever, yes. And this definitely reinforces that, because I don't think I could see Cinnamon Roll Cappius being approached for office either.
It feels like they have changed his character to fit a new actor. So I sort of feel like the Cafius from season one doesn't exist anymore. So we're watching a completely new character.
Yeah, I feel that especially anytime that they mention Van Damme, like, because this guy sort of like puffs out his chest and is like, you know, like, oh, yes, Van Damme. And the other Cafius are just sort of like, yeah, he cool. I like him. But, like, it's so frustrating to watch this new actor. And I didn't think that that was going to be the case in the first episode. I was like, oh, it'll be fine. It's whatever. Stuff happens. But I agree. I feel like I'm watching a whole different person in the cluster.
I think it's interesting in that correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe the entirety of this season was pretty much written while the first Cafius was still a part of the cast. So it was less of like the new actor informing the character, but more of like the writers taking the character in this weird direction. Mm.
Didn't he film a lot of it too?
He filmed, I think, not a lot of it. I think he filmed like through the first couple of episodes, including the Christmas special. So I actually would be really interested to see how he played off this political plot line. And if it would have felt as strange with him in the role as it does with both the sort of new Cafius as a character and new Cafius in terms of an actor.
Give me them outtakes.
I just can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I also can't see, like, I feel like this Jella has less to do.
Yeah.
Because, it could be that he's always been, he probably has the same, if I went back and like actually clocked it, he probably has the same amount of writing that he did last season. But I feel just like his presence is like so lessened with this newer Cafius. And again, like I said, it's probably just me reading too much into it, but I definitely, when I stopped to think about it, realized that he's not, like, his purpose feels a lot less, because I feel like this Cafius is more like, oh, I'm Cafius, whereas the other one was like, yeah, that's me.
I don't think you're wrong. I think part of it comes from a lot of the first season revolving around the Van Damme, and, like, Cafius is very much this bus driver and kind of their day-to-day with that bus. But we haven't seen really any of his day-to-day. We've seen maybe two scenes, one of them being in this episode of Cafius actually driving the bus and like driving people around.
Yeah. Also, can he just stop the bus for 15 minutes? Like, I feel like that's probably, yeah.
I mean, I would think that people would be trying to actually get somewhere, yeah, and having that 15 minute unexpected layover.
Yeah. The unexpectedness of it. Like, if it happened every day, like, fine, you use your 15 minutes how you want to use them. But like, it's felt like everyone on that bus was like, why are we stopping?
More time for them to watch whatever movie was playing, I guess.
I don't know. That's what I was thinking.
Because I looked up and I saw that like big TV screen. Oh yeah, that's one way to keep occupied during a bus ride. Let's talk about that layover. Actually, I want to get into this because this to me was also a very weird and uncomfortable scene. So basically, we have this really happy-go-lucky montage with Cafius and Sun, which I don't think we've seen or felt anything like this in a while, but he's like really excited and like driving to work and happy. And he goes to visit Zakiya and he gets up there. Everyone recognizes him as the guy from her interview. He's a viral sensation. But you have these three guys, like these three hecklers who make fun of his appearance and are just super rude. And then end up talking about Zakiya and the fact that like they think she's a lesbian or that she may be bi and that she had this huge controversy while living, I think, in London. And they just bother me so much. I wanted to hit them.
Well, I think it also comes down to like the, you know, I'm better than you because you're outside driving a bus and I'm sitting in here in a suit that I paid for with my salary and like cozy air conditioning and, you know, I'm not sweating and, you know, like they know that they are of a higher status and they're definitely using that against him, which like that just instantly rubbed me the wrong way to begin with. So I don't like them.
And like, I hated the term lunchbox. Like, mm-hmm. She prefers a lunchbox to a baguette. Could you just be adults and say exactly what you mean? Because the fact that they had to use multiple metaphors, it just,
Well, that's kind of the point, isn't it? That they are not.
I know. It's just, I forget about this. And then every time I hear the lunchbox line, I don't know.
Yeah, it's really uncomfortable.
And then Cappius leaves without leaving a message for Zakiya. Do we think that this informed his view of her, or he was just feeling not great about himself in the situation and that's kind of why he left? How did we read this?
I think it might have been a combination.
Yeah, he was really self-conscious about himself. But I think there was definitely a level of discomfort about what he was hearing, too.
Those big jerks touch Cappius. He's too good for them anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he was going there to like ask her out or if he was going there to like ask her for professional advice. So like when he first got there, I thought that he was going there to consult with her about, you know, running and government and like, you know, using his message and, you know, you got me into this sort of deal. But then when those guys started like heckling him, I was sort of like, oh, I don't know if, I mean, he still might have been going there for that though. Like, and he was just discouraged all around. But yeah, I don't know. I thought that that was his original intention for going there.
I wonder if it was less like bothered by the fact that she might not be straight, but more that maybe he was thinking of asking her out when she wouldn't be interested in him and he was embarrassed for not realizing it.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Given his character, I think that definitely would be the more likely situation with that. But no, that's a good point, Brittany. I didn't think about the fact that like maybe he was going there for professional advice because she would be the best person for him to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely something to keep an eye on. Good point. Okay, let's move on to Sun. Let's talk about Sun because she is happy, like legitimately happy. And I don't know if we've seen this before with her. She returns to her trainer's house and reunites with him and her dog. There's that cute little montage that's intercut with like her and Cappius where she's eating and like slurping her bowl. And I know that we have talked about how in the past she had seemed like she had less personality and more just like fighting skill. And now we're getting more of her as a person. Did this endear her to you? Because I think, Caitlin, you were the one who had kind of mentioned that previously, that she was growing on you. Did this endear you to her even more?
I mean, not this particularly. I've liked her a lot more the last several episodes.
Okay.
When she finally started, like, speaking.
Fair.
It helped. But I liked this a lot. The scene where, like, her dog wakes her up, licking her in the face. Like, it is just the cutest thing. Like, ugh, love it. So cute.
Her dog is adorable and so fluffy. So fluffy. The scene where the dog wakes her up, for some reason this time around, I kept thinking, like, you're in your trainer's house. Like, why are you sleeping in your underwear? Maybe he might walk in. I don't know why I was so preoccupied on that this time. And I'm probably the only one who had that worry. But it all went away.
I was watching this on the plane today. So I had a couple of scenes where I was like, oh no, this 87-year-old woman sitting next to me. I'm just going to hold my phone really, really close to my face with the brightness all the way down.
Oh, like the Leela scenes probably.
Yeah, that was fun. It's a good time. I watched 3 episodes flying to Germany. because I was a little bit behind. And then I downloaded this one to watch on the way home today because I wasn't sure if I was going to be recording while I was abroad last weekend. And I was watching it. And, oh, man, thank God there was no one in the middle seat next to me on the flight there. So like I had a little bit more freedom. But whoo, man, I was like in a window seat on the way home, and I was like seated like with the like my back like kind of tilted, so like the person behind me wasn't looking at. I'm like, oh my God, this is a disaster. So, not great to watch in public.
At least it wasn't an orgy.
That's so true. I was spared.
Yeah, the Lila scenes are like, usually pretty high.
The Lila scenes just never ended. I'm like, am I going to just fast forward this and call it a day? Because honestly, I can't do this.
And when she doesn't put on the, or when she puts on the robe, it doesn't get any better.
It doesn't get any better. I was like, oh, good, clothing. Nope, never mind.
Nope, not so much. Oh, boy. The other two things I wanted to point out about Sun and her storyline here was, one, she sees yet another interview with Junki. And as a result, breaks yet another monitor, because that's apparently what she does. But she vows to kill him at this point, which we haven't seen previously, which is a pretty extreme thing. I mean, I know he killed their father, but we've never heard her say anything like that previously, have we?
No.
We haven't heard, I don't think we've heard her say it. I think we've like felt it.
Oh yeah.
But I don't think she's actually vocalized it.
So was the vocalization a surprise at all? Or like a, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but was it jarring in any way?
I thought it was jarring a little bit. Mainly because like we were just saying, like, you know, you feel it, but everyone else has sort of been like, you know, sent to kill her, and she's responded. And now, like, you know, I'm like, oh, but her brother, you know, he's been so like aloof, like, you know, that he's the one doing this, but now to like have this said, like, oh, this is my enemy. It was just very, it was a lot. I mean, I don't want to say I'm happy, but like, please go kill him. I don't like him very much.
He needs to go.
Yeah, I was getting angry when watching him on the TV.
But then you had, like, the lady I've just been calling, like, Mama Murderess. Like,
I like it. Let's continue doing that.
Telling her in the last episode not to do anything that would, like, destroy her innocent heart. And then she's like, I'm going to murder him.
And the trainer's like, yep, good plan.
Yeah, the trainer's like, okay, yeah, sure.
He kind of seems like, if you aren't, I will.
And we keep calling him her trainer, but let's be real. That's her real dad.
Yes. Her real father figure, for sure.
Yeah. Taking care of the dog, taking care of her.
He's her home.
I like him.
Yeah, and we get a really good sense of how he feels about her when Moon comes to visit Sun. The trainer, her dad, is very protective of her and like is very upfront with Moon about how like she competed under a different name because her real father didn't like that she competed and didn't think women should. And Moon gets it. Moon tells the trainer like he wants to keep her safe, talks about how he respects her, and knows that there was a hit put on her. So you kind of see the trainer soften towards him a little bit. But I really loved this visit with the two of them. I'm not sure, how did you guys read this scene? Did it feel like Moon was putting on airs or kind of telling the trainer what he wanted to hear? Or do you believe Moon and his motives?
I don't know if I believe him just yet. Because he just got his ass handed to him the last time he saw her. So I don't know if that's like a turn on for him.
Kind of seems like it.
Yeah, like he's displaying a pattern of behavior here. But yeah, I'm not, I don't trust anyone, to be completely honest, outside of the cluster at this point. So
fair.
I don't even know if I trust the trainer. But right now, my gut tells me no, not to trust him.
I'm on the other end, and it's probably a bad idea, but I kind of do trust him because I feel like he was very clearly aware she was there and could have easily arrested her or made the effort to.
Yeah, that was going to be my other question. He saw that there was a second teacup and that it was still warm, but that he knew that she was there.
I don't know if he knew that she was like right there, but I'm sure he knew she was somewhere nearby, and he makes no effort to go look for her or anything. Like, I think he genuinely just wanted to talk to the trainer. Daddy trainer.
Oh, let's not say daddy.
You had to go there.
Of course you did.
I go there. I live there.
Oh boy. Oh my gosh, words are really hard for me today. The conversation last week in terms of sun and moon on our podcast revolved around Moon's motivations and whether or not he was the person that Sun had sex with for the first time and whether or not that paints his motivations towards her. There were some who were saying, like, I hope he was not the person who she had sex with, because then, like, he would be gaga over her in terms of, like, sex, because he most likely lost his virginity to her as well. And then there was another camp where it would, like, I think he was that same person. But what he really respects is, like, her as a fighter and, like, her as a person. And so with that kind of painting how I feel about how he feels about her, it's a long line of weirdness. It feels to me, and the first time I watched this, I very much trusted Moon. And for the same thing, for the same reasons you said, Caitlin, he did not try to look for her. He did not make any sort of threats. It didn't feel like he was holding information back. Like, he very much put it out there that, like, he knows that there was doctored video and that the guards that were in the prison were not actual prison guards. So these things kind of endeared me to him and made me trust him at this point. Mai, do you remember how you felt about Moon when you first watched this?
Oh, I thought he was cute.
Fair.
Yeah. And I think I trusted him because of the previous episode when he didn't shoot her.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the chance.
Yeah, he wasn't trying. If he would have shot her, it would have been he was trying to stop her. Because perhaps he believed she was a murderer. But he was trying to instead, like, take her in.
Do his job.
Mm-hmm.
So he seems legit.
He seems legit. But as we know, that might not always be the case.
Now I'm feeling kind of suspicious.
Witness here, so.
What did you say?
You guys have made me very suspicious of him now.
No.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
Caitlin, you have to disagree with me. That's how we keep balancing.
We need this balance here. I'm just trying to, I mean, obviously I know what happens, and I'm just trying to, you know,
don't put all the ideas out there. Here.
Yeah. I just think Sun and Moon's relationship is very interesting.
Sun and Moon, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So cute.
Yeah. And moving on, because I don't want to say anything else about that.
Anyway.
Yes. All right. Any last thoughts about Sun and kind of what's going on with her?
Her dog is so cute.
Yes.
Because she was cuddling him while she was listening to the conversation. And I was just, oh, so cute.
You, Fluffy.
Love him so much. All right, let's move on to Nomi, and let's talk about one of my favorite characters, who I think is super adorable, Bug. So, Bug, I love him so much.
I do, too.
Bug figures out a way to get Nomi off of the FBI and BPO's official radar, and he proposes E-Death. And the scene in which he describes E-Death is so very entertaining.
So good.
I think it's one of someone's favorite lines, I think I saw. So we're not going to get too much into that. But basically, so E-Death is where all of the records and all of the bolos and everything for Nomi, like, get wiped. She no longer exists according to the internet. And so Nomanita and Bug go to a movie theater to meet the guy so that they can get more information or get the E-Death drive, basically. And I will talk about this a little bit later, but I love this scene of them at the movies because up until this point, Bug and Aminia have no idea who is in Nomi's cluster. And then they find out that they're watching a Lito Rodriguez movie and that Lito is in her cluster, and Bug freaks out. Bug knows all the words to this movie and knows Spanish, the language of love. And we'll talk about him in a second, but Bug really makes Lito feel a little bit better. He makes him smile. How are people feeling about Bug at this point? I like to check in because he's one of my favorite characters, and I know people weren't super happy with him to begin with, but how are we feeling about him now?
He's so cute.
Yes. Okay.
So I couldn't keep a straight face watching that scene because they kept saying E-Death, like, in the most dramatic way possible. I'm like, do you hear yourselves? You're saying E-Death. E-Death! That's the dumbest word I've ever heard.
It's like email, except for death.
And there's just the dramatic weight being given to it. I was like, you keep saying E-Death.
Could you imagine it, though? Like, being wiped from the internet? Starting over?
Yeah, I mean, is this Nomi's best option, do we think, at this point?
I think it's part of a bigger option. I mean, her problems aren't completely over because I feel like BPO...
Of course.
I think it sounds really tempting. The concept, I mean.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely going to help put, like, a hindrance on some things that are going on, but I don't think it's the be-all, end-all of her problems.
Do you think it'll make it easier for her to just live in the world? Do you think this will help her not have to be in hiding as much?
Maybe as much. I think she still needs to lay low for a little while because it's like, yeah, those messages have disappeared, but like her
updates
sure hasn't, you know, like people who were looking for her, like their memories weren't Men in Black wiped, you know?
Yeah.
I still think she needs to be extra cautious, but like maybe they can go see more Lito movies.
Yeah.
Current postings on the internet will be wiped, but it's not like the people doing the things will stop making posts.
But is it just posts, or is it like there's a death record for her on the internet now?
That's what I was trying to understand. Like, is
that's my concept of it.
Yeah, she's definitely not declared dead because... I don't think that
you know,
that
was really unclear.
I think it's just like a digital
picture. See what you did there, Mai.
Yeah, because if it's just clearing Nomi's internet browser, like hardcore, then that's kind of weak.
Yeah, like, so I was wondering...
And also,
like,
can I get in on that?
So I was wondering if there's, like, you know... And death notice and death records and stuff.
Or is it like a virus that anything in the future also gets removed?
I don't know. I just took it as like any sort of digital proof of her existence is wiped. So like she would still have her birth certificate, like the physical copy, I guess. But like they wouldn't be able to put out any sort of bolos or anything on her because they wouldn't be able to prove that she existed without perhaps that physical evidence. That was my concept of e-death. And I really hope that there's a sensei listener out there who can either correct me or validate me. But that was my concept of it.
Because that's not really like a death. It's just like erasing the past. So I'd expect like e-death to involve like everyone now thinks she's dead, not just all these files disappeared.
Yeah. Otherwise, I feel like she would have been able to hack her way and do that on her own and not have to make some sort of deal with a guy in the Beaver Vendetta mask that like she owes him a favor in exchange for this flash drive.
Yeah, so the wiki just says that it's a redaction protocol that erases warrants and records and hashtag everything.
That doesn't seem like enough.
Presumably created by the NSA and CIA. Cool beans, I guess.
So then if that's the case and it's not like a true e-death, like how Caitlin and I are thinking of it, is it worth owing this shadow group a favor? And do we think that's going to be collected on at some point?
This well, is a yeah. TV show. Of course it is.
Yes. Smoking gun. I mean, like if that detective is still like staking them out and he sees Nomi walking down the street, he's not going to be like, I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, he's not going to be like, oh, my records show that there's nothing out for her anymore. BPO is still going to like have it out for her.
But he can't legally do anything. He can't bring her in if there's no...
He could bring her into BPO for sure.
Yeah.
And he can bring her in because can't they hold you for like up to like 24 or 48 hours without charges?
Hmm.
Do you have to have any sort of probable cause for that, though?
You can bring her in for a psych hold because her mother would definitely testify to her being
that's true
herself or others.
Fair. Fair point. All right. Well, it's something to keep an eye on. And if anyone has any more insight on what e-death entails, please, please, please write us in because I am interested to know. Let's move on, though, from here, because I really, really, really want to talk about the love of my life, Lito Rodriguez. In this episode, we see him grappling with the fact that he's getting typecast. He, Fernando, and Danny are going through scripts, and basically all he's getting offered are roles that are offensive stereotypes. And that whole scene of them going through that stuff really broke my heart.
Yeah. That was rough, man.
Yeah.
And just hearing all of the different stereotypes that gay men get cast as, or like the roles that are out there. As someone who is not a gay man, it's something that I have never realized until this show, that these sorts of roles are basically the only ones that we see them in. And that really hit hard for me. Because I feel guilty, I never realized it. But then he does get a piece of really good news, or at least I think it's good news. He receives an invitation to be the Grand Master of the Sao Paulo Gay Pride Parade. And there's an interesting debate kind of going on here. He thinks it'll be the death of his career, whereas Hernando and Danny think it's a really great opportunity. What side do you guys fall on here? Do you agree with his stance that it would be really hard for him to get roles after that, or do you think that he should just go ahead and do it?
I think they're both right.
Yeah, he may as well.
I mean, I think if he goes, he is never going to get the roles that he wants, but I think he was never going to anyway. Mm-hmm. So what he needs to do is open himself up to the future.
Rebranding.
Yeah, basically. Be open to the future because you can't hold on to the past. And this would be a really good way for him to rebrand, as Mai said.
I like
and that. Have a good time.
I mean, seemingly have all of them have a good time. I can't see him going anywhere by himself.
Yeah. Danny would not let that happen.
No, Danny would have the best time.
I mean, she said she'd never been to Sao Paulo immediately before, like, any talks of them actually going were even happening. She was into it. I like this storyline because I enjoy seeing really moody Lido. That sounds awful, but he's so dramatic and extra a lot of the time and just really moody, which I can relate to a lot, the moodiness. But he gets some really great confidence boosters after this. So he doesn't really wallow in his moodiness. He gets a confidence booster from Bug, who loves his movies. He gets a confidence booster from the bartender that he had made out with previously, because the bartender thanks him for inspiring him to propose to his boyfriend, which I thought was really great and a good thing for Lido to see. And then he gets some confidence boost from his cluster, mainly Cappius, who's like, you know, courage. His refrain always is courage.
And Wolfgang. Wolfgang did something here.
and Wolfgang did something here. I loved the fact that he returned to this bar to get tequila cubed and to kind of keep that going. And we also get the sort of iconic-ish scene of the whole cluster kind of taking a shot here.
The other photo. Yeah.
Yes. The other social photo that I had sent to Brittany, also with not original Cappius. So I didn't think about that. I'm sorry.
Hashtag spoilers.
Yeah, I guess. So how do we think Lido is doing at the end of this episode at this point? Because he takes a look at that letter from the gay pride parade right before taking that shot. Do you think he's going to go through with it? Do you think he has the confidence he needs? Or what do you think is going on here, newbies? Or how do you feel about it?
I don't think this show would turn down an opportunity to portray that. So I'm expecting them to go.
No, hashtag no comment. The only thing in this whole series that I'm spoiled for.
Interesting. Okay. Then I will not dig any further. And we'll just have to see what happens then.
There's only one thing in this whole series that I'm spoiled for, and I know it's coming. So I'm not going to address it any further.
Okay. When it happens, will you let us know?
Oh, of course.
Okay, good.
You better.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Otherwise, I have literally nothing else to talk about that episode. So
fair enough.
You're like, okay. Nothing interesting happened.
Nothing to see here. Moving on. So I want to get back to the shot scene really quickly, but I also want to shine some light on the Riley Will aspects of it before we get to it. So in their storyline, Will talks to Whispers again, and as always, we get a little bit more of an information dump. Basically that Whispers was trying to engineer a future with a species that is more intolerant, possessive, and violent than any species in the Earth's history. It's a lofty goal, I would say. And then he also said that, like, Angelica believed it to be the key for both species' survival and that she was on board with it.
What? Sounds fake, but okay.
Well, that was going to be my question. Do we think that she thought that there was no other way for the species to survive except for this way? Like, why do we think she was involved, or how, I don't know, do we think she was involved with it?
I mean, I think she's shady as hell, so it would not shock me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wouldn't shock me either.
There's some Kool-Aid that should not have been drunk at some point. Like, it's... I don't get how she's buying into the bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, humans have been violent, intolerant, and possessive throughout our history. And I guess to be more so would ensure the survival of those that are more so, but that doesn't seem like a very homosensorium thing to do because of how empathetic they are. It just doesn't seem like a good fit. And you would think that Angelica would know that, but at this point, it's really hard to tell.
Speaking of underdeveloped characters.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's not the show's fault that we don't know as much about her because she killed herself in the first 5 seconds of the show. Yep. But I don't feel like we, as an audience at this point, have a good enough sense of her, just like we didn't of Jonas, because Jonas couldn't be bothered to say much more than she was brilliant and beautiful, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But from what we've gathered, I just find her sketchy as hell.
Because she hasn't been developed to even care about her involvement at this point?
Not particularly.
Okay.
Fair enough. I think I'm annoyed at the fact that I don't care.
I get it. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Kind of makes me mad that they didn't do the job that I wanted them to do.
I know that the group that was on last week's podcast was talking about her as well. And just to cast someone as big as Daryl Hannah in this show and then
flop.
Use her as like imagery throughout a lot of the episodes, but then not do anything about it is very frustrating and just doesn't feel like that was the goal.
Yeah. But she doesn't do anything.
She's so vacant. Like it's almost like she's already drugged in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like there's no real personality that you can point to.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to make something work that's just not, in the sense that, like, you know, they were referring to the cabin and stuff in this episode, and I was like, oh yeah, I already forgot about that, and it was literally like an episode or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Mai. It's more like I'm frustrated that I just don't care, that I'm like annoyed by probably what is the biggest plot line that they're trying to unravel. I'm just annoyed by it because I just don't feel any investment.
And then on the flip side, with a character that we don't see very often, Will's dad, I feel more invested in him than I do Angelica. And I hate whenever like his name is in Whisper's mouth.
Same.
Like he threatens him again in this episode after, I think the last time we thought about Will's dad was when Whispers visited him at Christmas.
I think I'm more invested in Raoul's dad than.
Oh, yeah. He's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just really interesting to see how, well, actually just parents in general, I feel like we've felt for almost every parent on this show, maybe aside for Wolfgang's, and even then, I feel like I have a better sense of Wolfgang's parents than I do of Angelica as like the cluster's parents. And you think like she would be more front and center than she actually is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's just like this ghostly figure that keeps popping up and whispering, "Will."
Oh boy. But yeah, it's not great. I don't want to say too much more about Angelica, but because I know that, again, it was hammered home a little bit last week, but I definitely wanted to talk about her again here because she is brought up. But then later on in the episode, we're still with Will, and they are at the bar now. They're about to take this shot, and Will realizes that he's acting like a fugitive, but he's not actually a fugitive. Like, he's done nothing wrong. And he has this line where he says a fugitive runs because he's alone while a cop knows that he's not. And so he and Riley kind of come up with this idea to try to find more of their kind, because they kind of realize, and this is something like the guy notes as well, that the BPO has so many resources. And so they think that that's because there's a lot more of the sensates out there than they thought. And so there's this plan to basically have a rave and connect with people. And some sensates are saying, no, this is not a great idea. It's too risky. And some are like, we have to do something, or like, yeah, this is a good idea. How did you guys feel when they were first presenting this plan and kind of arguing all the sides? How was there any one sensate that you kind of sided with in terms of their view on it? Or did you think this was a good idea to begin with? Does it make sense to you?
I didn't think it was a good idea, but I wanted to see it happen.
Mm-hmm. See something happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I completely agreed with the fact that there was going to be a move made. And so I didn't care what it was at that point. I just wanted something to, I wanted them to do something.
I'm really intrigued by the idea of like opening up the world more, and this, the way they have like been hinting at with Lila, but the idea of connecting to other sensates outside your cluster and everything. And I think that that's a really interesting thing to explore in this idea that there are, it's not as rare as we might have thought. I think that's really interesting. So I am intrigued on a storytelling level by this plan and what it could mean. I don't know if like on a character level it was a good idea, but I think narratively it's really interesting.
Yeah, because I feel like they've played a lot in the space that they have put out there to begin with, but in order to grow, the world has to grow as well.
Mm-hmm. And I've been enjoying this season a lot more because it's just everything with them together, working together, connecting to each other, just makes the show so much more satisfying. So the potential to continue to expand what is so satisfying works for me.
I agree. And I think it's interesting to see, by having these different sensates from different clusters interact with each other, I think it's a much better way of learning how things work and like figuring out how they can kind of come together or connect than just by getting the info dumps. You feel it a lot more. And I mean, we certainly feel a little bit when Riley makes her speech at the rave. Aside from telling Will she loves him for the first time, which like,
aww,
girl power, like you tell him first. We see three specific sensates reacting to this speech. I'm not sure. I still don't understand how the sensates or the Homo Sensorium know that like this speech is for them. That still is kind of hazy to me. But you have the monk in the crowd, you have Puck in the crowd, and you have, I don't watch Doctor Who, so I don't know what number he is, but you have the doctor in the crowd who basically freaks out, says holy shit, and flees. Like, you have all of these people there, and you see how very different they are in terms of like where they're from or their ages. And you kind of get the potential of where we could go from here.
He's the seventh.
The seventh, thank you.
I mean, I assumed it was like some kind of message sent through her music that, like, I don't know how, but connected to only other sensates in some way. Like,
spidey sense?
Basically, like, wibbly wobbly sciencey wincy something.
I mean, I watched this episode and then I watched Hotel Transylvania 3 on the plane. And
good double feature.
Yes. Uh-huh. And so in that movie, there is a scene at the end where they discover this scroll and it's the only way to end all monsters is to play this one song that will like turn the Kraken evil. But then they play like these other like This is so stupid, but they play like these good feeling songs. They'll play like Good Vibrations, and it like breaks the Kraken out of its spell, and he starts like dancing. But like the ultimate song that connects everybody and makes like even the bad guy good again, and it's great, is the Macarena. So I'm just a little disappointed that she didn't play the Macarena after I watched that very moving film about how the Macarena binds us all
in brings the, us all together
goodness. So.
And What's Up, I guess, doesn't do the same thing for you?
No, the Macarena is the Macarena. Most ultimate feel-good song ever.
Good to know.
I mean, it is kind of universal, I guess.
Macarena.
Yeah, exactly. Fair enough. Yeah, I never really fully understand. I don't know. I know Nomi mentioned something about putting out an under the radar sort of message, but it wasn't clear to me whether or not she actually did that with this, or if there was something put there ahead of time. Just because I was thrown off by the fact that like the doctor was in that audience, or that the monk was in that audience. Something in my mind should have brought them there, but I'm not sure what that was. So that's why I was questioning it.
Yeah,
I still
science
know.
Question.
Yeah,
Mitch isn't here to question the science.
I guess I'm doing it for him then. So yeah, if anyone listening knows the answer or has a little bit more insight, please let us know, because I would like to know these things. And that was the end of the episode, basically. Whispers comes for Riley and Will, as well as the police, but they flee with Vincent by boat, as one does in a really, really exciting chase. We flee by boat.
I loved Will's smirk as they were driving off in the boat. Like, that was Will's, so good.
Yes. Will's sass in this show is my favorite Will.
Sock and shoe combos, though. I'm over it. I'm tired of seeing the bad socks and sneakers combo.
Let the man live.
Can I say that that is not a Midwest thing that I... Well, never mind. I take that back. It kind of is with the dads and then the bros. But, like, Will is not a dad or a bro.
Yeah, it's like... And he's not even, like, trying. It's just, like, bad. It's just bad. Mm-hmm.
Just you wait until
he just needs like some shoulder socks. Every time I see them, I just get angry.
I'm with you. Not a good look. Not a good look at all. All right. Other than Will's socks,
keep the scruff.
Yeah, that too. Any other notes on this episode? Things that we didn't talk about?
Did we talk about them saying that they love each other?
I briefly touched on it, but
they're cute.
Yeah, they are cute.
Also, they really nailed this whole, like, I'm in one space, you're in another, even though we're actually in the same physical space thing, which was, like, kind of cool, so.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Was this one of the first times that we've seen them do something like that?
I think when they're in, since they've shared the same physical space, I think so.
Okay.
I think I could be wrong, but it just like stood out to me in this episode.
Like when they're actually kissing and not just mentally kissing.
Well, they were mentally kissing because she was on the DJ stand.
Yeah, but I was gonna, when they actually do that, is he feeling the sensation of him kissing her and then feeling her feeling that, and then, you know, the overlap of the overlap of the overlap.
I'm not sure.
Is he feeling double? Is that what
feelingception?
Yeah. That was always my feeling.
Like,
that's how I always saw
mirror
it.
Effect thing.
It's more intense because you can feel both sides, I think.
Yeah, and then you feel feeling that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just why they spiral into an orgy always. Theory.
Yes. I think it's kind of like in the same way where, and I might be the only person who does this when I'm bored, but like if you like touch two fingers together, you can't isolate the one half. You just like get the whole. And so I feel like as a homosensorium, like to be able to kiss in real life, it feels like that, like it feels whole rather than half. Mm. I don't know. Good point though. Good question.
Science,
exactly. All the science. And there will be more science to question as we start meeting more homosensorium. Which, that's not a spoiler, that it is coming because they put that call out there. But that was the end of the episode. Another last note, Fear Never Fixed Anything, the title, which I'm sure we all picked up on, came from Wolfgang. So again, Brittany, Wolfgang
did something.
He not only did something, but he did something title worthy.
Said something.
Title that he's getting.
Like, I was going to say, I feel like I know what the podcast episode title this week
was. Oh, and apparently the guy was credited as being played by the guy.
Yeah, I saw that.
A+.
Yeah.
Good job there. All right, let's get into our favorite scenes and favorite lines to wrap this up. My favorite scene, I mentioned before, was Nomanita and Bug going to see Leto's film with Leto. Because I wish I could watch Leto's movies. My roommate and I were talking about that, and it's a real shame that we don't get more of that.
I loved that shot where, like, Amanita and Nomi, like, turn around when the anonymous guy disappears, and Leto on the screen is turning around, too. Like, that was such a good shot.
Yes. Well thought out for sure. I noticed that too. So good. Mai, what was your favorite scene?
The bar scene with the tequila cubed square. It's just
eight. A good throwback. He wants eight. Yeah. It's so great. I love seeing them do things in sync.
Yeah. He's so cute.
He is. Caitlin, your favorite scene?
Could there be any other but Sun reuniting with her puppy? Ugh, no. So cute!
Oh, the shot of her opening the doors and then he just runs out.
And the dog, she's coming beforehand.
Yeah, the dog like perks up and starts running towards the door before she gets there. Oh, so cute!
He knows. Yes. And Brittany, your favorite scene?
Mine was actually the group getting ready for Riley's show, like those shots where they're all in the same bathroom, I thought was kind of cool. And Riley like dyeing her hair and Will shaving and, you know, everyone else sort of in their own state of being, just going into that group shot. Yeah, I liked that. I also liked the contrast of like watching, I just thought of it now, like Leto watching Hernando at the premiere say the lines and then watching Bug watch the movie and say the lines, because like, yeah, like he's appreciative of like Hernando watching the films and like being into them and being so passionate about his career, but like it's different watching a fan watch it, like an actual fan who's moved by your work. So I just thought that was cute.
Definitely. And yeah, like Bug is watching it as a fan. And I think Hernando maybe knows some of the lines because he helped rehearse them.
Yeah. So, and like, also, like, I'm sure he is.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I'm sure he's like a fan in some sense. But at the same time, like, it's, you know, it's hard to talk yourself out of like, oh, my mom thinks I did a good job versus like someone else being like, you did a great job.
Well, and someone who's in a different country.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. All right. Time for favorite lines. And mine is actually from that scene, basically, or sort of a, it was not from that scene, it was about that scene. But towards the end, Leto asks, guys, are we really going to put our lives in the hands of someone like Vincent? To which Riley replies, what do you mean someone like Vincent? And Leto says, someone who, and Cassius finishes sentence saying, doesn't like his movies. Which is all the setup for Leto to say, nah. Well, I mean, taste in movies says a lot about someone.
True. Very, very true.
He is very much aware of what people think of him. And it's adorable. And I love Leto so much. Not wrong. No. But what does that say about Karen, though?
Oh, Karen. Tremors is not a good movie series.
I will fight you if you bring up Mortal Kombat, because I like that.
That's why I went to Tremors.
Oh, man.
We all have one or two that is not good.
Oh, I have many that are not good.
Trying to save Karen here. Just go with it.
Yeah, I throw under the bus all the time. We still love each other. It's fine.
Yeah.
But Mai, what was your favorite line?
Okay, so it's not my favorite line, but it's just one of the more important lines, I think. Mm-hmm. It's when Will says, "I know you killed Sarah Petrel," and Whispers goes, "Who?" Because apparently he just kills a lot of people and can't remember their names.
It also feels very meta. Like,
yeah. Who?
Because when we were going through the second season, when I was watching it live, I forgot about the whole Sarah Petrel storyline.
Yeah, but like the gap between the seasons.
Yeah. So, it feels meta, but also, yeah, it's.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, good pick. Caitlin, your favorite line?
So mine was Sun and her trainer. And he says, "Tell me you have a war plan." And she says, "I have no plan. I have an enemy, and I won't stop until he's dead, or I am." And the trainer goes, "Good plan."
Actual dad.
Brittany, your favorite line, please.
So my favorite line is an entire scene, and I am not going to read the whole scene, but I'll just explain it. So it's when Bug is explaining Edith, and they were like, "Can you please stop with the pregnant pauses?" And I just, the final thing where he like goes to say, it's like, "I'm going to go hit him or like get in touch with him," or something like that. And he just pauses, and then he goes to walk away, and he like turns around and says another word.
That whole scene
was just so ridiculous. And I'm really glad that they called it out for being ridiculous. Like the way
he was talking Bug. To Edith.
I'll go set it.
Yeah.
Up.
Yeah. Oh, they know. I love Bug so much. I'm glad that everyone is enjoying him.
He's so extra.
Yeah. But good pick. I enjoyed that line as well. All right. Well, those are our favorite scenes, our favorite lines, and what we thought about this episode. And like I said multiple times now, we want to know what you think and what you picked out as your favorites. So please contact us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable, or you can also find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as always, we're really appreciative of 5-star reviews as well as like actual written reviews. They help grow our cluster because then other people can find us and join in on the fun. So please, if you are so kind, leave us an iTunes review. You could do it super easy from your phone. Just pause this episode and just go and hit the 5-star button. It takes like 2 clicks. Please do it. And if you leave us a review, or if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, your incentive this week is that Karen will let you know why her taste in movies is justified by making you watch a Tremors marathon.
That's supposed to be an incentive, not a threat.
Look, that's where my headspace was. There wasn't anything filled in.
Why not both?
Oh. I mean, to be fair. Yep. She won't let you forget that. Yeah. I feel like watching bad movies with Karen would be better than watching the bad movies at the request of Karen, because at least maybe her enthusiasm would rub off.
Listen, yeah. I watched Tremors and then talked to Karen about it.
Didn't help.
No. Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about, as I was saying it, I watched The Fifth Element with Karen.
Hey.
And I was not a big fan of it, and even her enthusiasm couldn't do it.
That's a good movie.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and so is Mortal Kombat.
Oh, hey, them's fighting words.
Mortal Kombat!
All right, listener feedback, guys. We have listener feedback. We just have one piece for this week. Mai, would you like to take this tweet, please?
Yeah, this comes from... This is the Queer Place at Nurse Brack, and they say, I feel for Natalie at the start of this episode, and I really appreciate that she was there for this one.
So I'm not exactly sure what this is referring to. I think it was about the discussion of polyphony, I think. And I was, if that's the case, I was happy that she was there to kind of explain it and break it down as well. Because it was like right at the beginning of last week's episode. Basically, Mitch hadn't even introduced them, and Natalie was already going to town and giving us a lesson. So, good things, all good things. Before we sign off today, as always, we're going to end with Caitlin's conundrums and Brittany's brainstorms. And they're going to be for Sense 8, Season 2, Episode 6, called Isolated Above, Connected Below. Ladies, mm-hmm. take it away.
That sounds sexual.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Another orgy. No.
Connected.
Well, I won't be on a plane this time, so maybe it'll be okay to watch.
Maybe.
Maybe. Isolated above, connected below. Maybe Wolfgang will be doing some
belowing
above and not connecting below. So, you know, we'll get some action out of him, or, you know, he could be done for a couple of episodes.
He did a lot this episode.
He did a lot. He said Felix's name into an empty room. That's asking a lot of him. I really hope we get more explorations of the Sensates trying to connect with more people. And, you know, but I think the isolated above might have to do with the fact that most clusters might not want to connect with them because maybe they figured out a way out of BPO's grasp, or they're working with them, or, you know, maybe there's something special about this Sensate that they're never going to really be connected. What do you think, Caitlin?
I mean, clearly someone's going to build an underground bunker.
Oh, yes, finally.
So everyone's going to be connected below because they're literally below ground.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's it.
And that's probably where the orgy's going to be, so they're all really connected below.
I take back everything I said.
Put all your eggs in that basket right there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess we will just have to wait until we watch the next episode to find out if there is a sex bunker that is constructed.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. Orgy bunker. Does that make it better?
No.
No. Sex bunker is pretty good.
Sex bunker. Cool. Well, until that time, this is goodbye from us for this week. I'm Danielle.
I'm Mai.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Brittany.
And we'll see you later, guys. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And, oh my God, my Siri just went off. Hold on. I'm not talking to you.